Welcome to Morbidology, the podcast. I'm your host, Emily G. Thompson, author of Unsolved Child Murders and co-author of Unsolved Murders, True Crime Cases Uncovered. The internet provides a cloak for monsters with nefarious thoughts and ideas. It provides these seedy characters easy access to freely consume our homes, our thoughts, and our lives. Social media is virtually an invisible world, a place where people can choose to be whatever or whoever they want to be. Of course, the internet can be a fantastic place for children and teenagers to explore their interests, learn, and socialize with like-minded people, but behind the veil of normalcy, sexual predators can be lurking. In 2012, the city of Van Buren, Arkansas, was rocked by the disappearance of a teenage girl. When it was discovered that she had been chatting online with a local sex offender, it forced parents to look with new suspicion at their children's phones and computers. Angela Allen was a 15-year-old student at Butterfield Junior High School. The principal, Karen Endel, said that Angela was, quote, a good kid, a regular student. You would see her and she'd always smile, end quote. Angela lived with her grandmother, Colleen Allen, who adopted her and her younger brother, Seth, when Angela was just 4 years old.
When I was 6 months, my dad walked out on me and my sister. And my biological mom is unfair as a parent. I've always grew up calling my grandma mom.
Families take care of families. And yes, it is a hard, difficult decision to make. But that's how you keep your families together, is by stepping up and taking care of your loved ones. I did not want to see anything happen to either one of those children. So they became my life. I took on these two and I thought, oh my gosh. It's a little more than what I bit off, but you know what? It's worth it. In the end, it's worth it.
Following her parents' divorce, Angela found it difficult to cope and she struggled during her first year in kindergarten. She repeated the grade and excelled. While she was a year behind the other kids her age, school officials said that the age difference wasn't noticeable. Angela was a happy-go-lucky kind of girl. Her family and friends said that she would always run up to people she knew and hug them when greeting them. She was full of life, vibrant, and very outgoing.
Smile every time she sees you, she wanted to give you a hug.
Every time I'd pull up, she'd run out the door and say, Aunt Abby! Oh, my favorite aunt! That was always her thing to come out, or wherever I was at, she was. She always come out running, Aunt Abby, I love you! And give me a big old hug.
A typical teenager, Angela liked boys and always fantasized about meeting her own Prince Charming that would sweep her off her feet, just like in the movies.
We get along pretty good. It's normal brother-sister thing. We'll argue a lot, but I mean, that's normal.
She's always loved her brother. They're like peas in a pod.
She is a huge romantic. Her favorite kind of movies are like Prince Charming, and you know, it's just everything falls together and happy ending. She's just trying to figure out where she is in this world and like what she's going to do with her life.
On the weekends, Angela would often babysit children living in her neighborhood. She absolutely adored children and would frequently hand out cookies and gifts to the neighborhood kids. Quote, Angela was a fun-loving child. She was trusting, she loved children, she loved her school, she loved her church. She would find the most simplest thing and take the simplest joy out of it, end quote, said her grandmother Colleen. Angela was a home bird and always stayed close to home and school. Tammy Locklear, a woman who worked at the neighborhood's community center, recollected how helpful Angela was. She often offered to help clean up or set up for an upcoming event. Angela, Seth, and Colleen lived in public housing. While low-income housing can often carry a mostly unwarranted bad reputation, that certainly didn't apply to Van Buren's Housing Authority community. The neighborhood of around 114 apartments was safe and there was a real community feel. Neighbours looked out for one another. One of Angela's best friends was Cheyenne Parmenter.
Me and Angie clicked right there. We just knew automatically we were best friends. Angie showed nothing but happiness and joy. I honestly wish I could have been like her. They'd have times where they didn't have much money, but her grandma would always put her and Seth first. No matter how things went, she always made sure they had food on the table.
For Angela's 16th birthday, Colleen had scrapped together enough money to buy Angela a BlackBerry. Plus, Angela had been doing additional chores around the home and for neighbours, and Colleen thought that she was more than deserving of the phone. All of her friends had phones, and Angela always felt left out.
Angela had been, "Mom, I got a birthday coming up. Hey, Mom, you see this? I need a new phone."
I've never seen someone that happy. Like, she was just ecstatic.
I wasn't really worried about her getting on the internet because I knew that all of her friends had Facebook and things like that, and that's how they stayed in touch with each other.
The phone was never out of Angela's hand. She spent hours upon hours tapping away and making phone calls to her friends. It was around 7:30 p.m. on the evening of the 10th of February 2012 when Angela left her home on 17th Street, telling her grandmother that she was going for a quick walk around the block. She said she'd only be around 10 or 15 minutes. Angela had wanted an early night because she had a busy day scheduled for tomorrow. She was scheduled to be babysitting and had planned to visit the local anime store and go out for dinner with Colleen. However, Angela never returned. Knowing that Angela would have her beloved phone on her, Colleen tried calling but received no answer. Colleen then called around several of Angela's friends to see if any of them had seen her, yet nobody had. Nevertheless, Colleen just assumed that Angela had stopped off at a friend's house and she began to doze off.
I was watching TV to see what the weather was going to do, and then I went to bed. I looked in Angie's room and her bed had not been slept in. I had no clue where Angela was at. I even tried calling her phone. I never got any response. I called Seth and told Seth that he needed to get home and that we had a family crisis going on.
Maybe she's just still asleep and she'll be home in a little bit. And I guess just me and my mom were just like really concerned about that because that was just out of the ordinary for her.
She said that when she woke up the following morning and saw that Angela's bed had not been slept in, she was frantic. She called the police to report Angela missing. As soon as police received the report, they got to work looking for the missing teenager. The Sheriff's Department in both Sebastian and Crawford County, the Arkansas State Police and the FBI assisted in the search. The same day, a number of Angela's friends received a text message from Angela's phone. In the message, she told her friends that she was going to Little Rock with a man named Jason.
She was in a Camaro headed towards Little Rock. I knew that didn't sound right. That's not Angie. I told the police about the text messages.
This immediately set off alarm bells. Angela was a homebody. There was just no way she would have went off with a man that she didn't know, and she most definitely would not have gone anywhere without telling Colleen. Investigator Patty Stroud was one of the detectives working with the cybercrimes unit of the Fort Smith Police Department.
I looked for information through the internet to locate people. And the first thing I wanted to do, what I felt was important in this case, was tracking her cell phone record. At this point, everybody was on my radar. She was very active on the internet. We found where she'd been in contact with several out-of-state phone numbers as well as local.
While trawling through Angela's phone records, they noticed numerous text messages from the same number. The number was identified as belonging to 36-year-old Lloyd Jones, a local sex offender who had been convicted of raping a woman in Sebastian County in 2001. He had broken into the woman's home in December of 2000 and held a box cutter to her throat, covered her mouth with tape, and then raped her numerous times. Jones was sentenced to 10 years in prison. Arkansas's treatment program for male sexual offenders is called the Reduction of Sexual Victimization Program. While incarcerated, Jones was enrolled in the program, which is extremely rigorous, consuming at least half of the inmate's day, 5 days a week, for around a year. Jones was released after serving 7 years. He was said to have a good record, only having one rule violation for not obeying an order. Following his release, he was labelled as a Level 3 sex offender. Level 3 is reserved for repeat sexual offenders. This meant that Jones could not live anywhere near children, such as play parks and schools. It also meant that he had to register on the sex offenders list regularly, and police would make surprise visits to check up on him. Following his release, Sebastian County Sheriff's deputies distributed flyers about Jones to those living nearby to inform them that he was a sex offender. Jones had gone to school for just around 12 years before dropping out. At 23 years old, he married his first wife and had 2 daughters. Following his arrest for rape, his wife left him. On Angela's Facebook, the Cyber Crimes Unit found conversations between Angela and Jones, as well as on the website mbuzzy.com, which is a social networking website that allows people to post pictures and chat with other users. Jones had claimed that his name was John and that he was in the 11th grade in a school in a different town. Over the course of several weeks, Jones groomed Angela and built up a relationship. He encouraged Angela to even send him explicit photographs of herself.
With her feeling how she was towards him, like she was actually going to be with him forever, he don't want just my body, he wants me, so kind of give him something that she wants to show him that she's actually very happy with him and that he can be happy with her.
On occasion, he would drive around her neighborhood and hope to catch a glimpse of her. He wasn't worried about being noticed because he had sent Angela a photograph of a teenage boy, pretending that it was him.
She did tell me that she was into a guy, and I asked her if she knew him, and she was like, yeah. She never told me his name or anything. She just said, you know, I don't really care about him. I know he's the one, you know, he's my Prince Charming. And she told me that, you know, he's basically the one she wants to be with for the rest of her life.
Jones was immediately listed as a person of interest, and now police began investigating whether or not he could have been involved in Angela's disappearance. At the time of Angela's disappearance, Jones was dating several women. One woman told police that he often took his laptop to Starbucks to chat online with other women, while another said that when he returned home on the evening Angela disappeared, his shoes and clothing were covered in mud. On the 16th of February 2012, Jones agreed to come down to the police headquarters for an interview. While there, he was charged with aggravated assault and was transported to the Sebastian County Jail, where he was being held without bail. Following his arrest, 2 women from Van Buren in Cave Springs came forward to speak about their very peculiar dates with Jones after they spotted his mugshot in the news. The first woman said that she met Jones online and spoke with him several times over the phone before he asked to meet her in person. They met up on the 3rd of February, just 6 days before Angela disappeared. Before the woman met with Jones, she sent his photograph to 2 of her friends along with the message, "Just in case." The woman said that Jones made her follow him in her car to Barling, just between Fort Smith and Lavaca, for a date. According to Jones, he was going to show the woman a witch's grave. She said that they drove to a dirt road and bridge where Jones began to talk weird. Jones told the woman, quote, "If I were you, I would have sent my picture out," end quote. The woman informed Jones that she had sent his picture to 2 of her friends. Jones then drove the woman to a rural spot near Arkansas 96 and asked her what she would do if he attacked her. The woman replied that she would fight him back. Shortly thereafter, the woman ended the date and went home feeling slightly uneasy. The second woman that went on a strange date with Jones said that she met him online. She said that he offered to show her historical buildings in the area. Now, this woman wasn't as forthcoming as the other woman, but she did say that Jones had asked her if she told anybody that she was meeting him before driving her to a rural spot near Arkansas 96. Once here, Jones tried to get the woman to enter a shed that was on the land, apparently to show her some tiles. She refused to get out of the car, but she said that Jones then began speaking about Area 51 and top secret government experiments that had taken place at Fort Chaff outside Fort Smith. He also spoke about a half-man, half-alligator that had escaped from Fort Chaff and said that his ex-wife and Jeffrey Dahmer, yes, you heard that right, tried to poison him. The woman felt uneasy and asked Jones to drive her back to a store in Lavaca where she had parked her car. Initially, Jones refused before finally driving her back. Jones followed the woman to her car, but she managed to open the door and threaten him with a gun she had hidden under her seat. The following day, after Jones' arrest, he made a startling confession. He told police that he had picked Angela up at a hospital parking lot in Van Buren. He confessed that they had driven to Arkansas River in an area just off Highway 253 in Lavaca, commonly known as the Mudtown Bottoms, where they began to get intimate. He said that he had intended on taking Angela back to his house, but at the time he was living with his parents, a girlfriend, an ex-girlfriend, and his nephew, so he decided against it because he thought it might upset his girlfriend. According to Jones, it was here that Angela revealed that she was only 16 years old. He said he responded to this revelation by striking Angela with both of his hands. He said he hit her with such force that Angela fell into the river, and according to Jones, this was the last time he saw her. He said he assumed that Angela may have been unable to swim, quote, because her arms might have been injured from when she was struck, end quote. With this new information, around 30 officers from various agencies began their search of the area. The Arkansas River was combed by divers while cadaver dogs were brought in to assist. Angela's family held out hope that Angela had climbed out of the river and was maybe hiding somewhere along the river or had maybe injured herself and couldn't walk.
You know, I'm not liking the news that we're hearing right now. I don't want to accept it, you know, but...
Right.
But Tammy and Laura and Abby, if it wasn't for them, my mom wouldn't be able to make it. You know, Angela, she was secret about some things that we didn't know till later on. And if we would have known beforehand, maybe, you know, things could be different. I'm kind of numb. We're all still trying to soak it all in. Well, mom and dads need to control what the kids are doing online. They need to be parents and just know what they're doing at all times.
Sadly, they would soon come to discover that this wasn't the case. On the 17th of February, officers began to search a rural hillside area just east of Lavaca. The area was just off Arkansas 96, around 17 miles from Angela's home, and was owned by Jones's brother. Nobody lived on the land, but Jones had been building a shed there. It was the same area that Jones had taken the two earlier women he had met online. When they arrived at the scene, cadaver dogs immediately picked up a scent and led officers to disturbed earth. They began to dig, and around 3 feet down, they found a large plastic barrel. As they dug even more, a hole in the side of the barrel revealed its contents, a human hand and a pair of shoes. When the barrel was unearthed, it was evident that there was a body stuffed inside. Sebastian County Sheriff Bill Hollenbeck announced that the remains were being sent for identification and autopsy. While he didn't say that the remains were those of Angela, most knew that in all likelihood they were. Firstly, there were no other missing person reports in the area, and secondly, it had been revealed that the body found in the barrel was that of a female, and she had been wearing clothing similar to what Angela had been wearing on the day that she disappeared. Quote, I certainly don't want to give any information that would cause any false hope or misinformation that could cause more trauma to the family, end quote, said Hollenbeck during a news conference. Meanwhile, a candlelit vigil was held at the community centre in Van Buren in remembrance of Angela.
Sixteen-year-old Angela Allen has been missing for over a week now.
There's a lot of love floating around here, big time.
Tears filled the community center in Van Buren, where family and friends gathered to remember Angela Allen with a candlelight vigil. Classmates say she'll be missed at school.
We've all known her for a while. We just known her most of our lives, most of us kids. And it's gonna be hard to get used to her being gone. It's really hard, and she's only been gone for 9 days.
Friends remember Angela's outgoing personality.
I'm going to be missing her. She was a good girl. A very good girl. And there's nothing else I can say. Just heaven's got a new angel right now.
Although the police have not ID'd the body, the family is already wondering what's next and how something like this could have been avoided.
I wished I had been more computer savvy than what I am. But I want the parents to understand and to realize there are people out there on those websites that they lie to these young children. They lie.
I understand why he couldn't just let her go. And I want justice, sir. I don't ever want to see him come out of prison, ever. He should never be out on the street.
Angela's mother just wants answers.
I want to know what her, I'm like my mother, I want to know what her last words were. Was it help? Was it mama? Was it daddy? Did she try to run? I want to know, just like everybody else in my family wants to know.
Family members and locals alike sang Amazing Grace and prayed. They wore pink pins that read, Justice for Angie. While the body had still not been identified, everybody in attendance knew in their hearts that Angela was never coming home.
Sebastian County deputies confirmed that the body of a young woman found stuffed in a plastic barrel is in fact the teenage girl reported missing last week.
Yeah, 16-year-old Angela Allen's body was found on the family property of a convicted sex offender.
Shortly after the vigil, the body in the barrel was identified as Angela Allen. A preliminary autopsy concluded that she had been strangled to death and there was trauma to her throat. There was no fluid in her lungs and no sign of a sexual assault. Jones was subsequently charged with first-degree murder and held on a $1 million bond. While being held in jail, Jones's father, Loyal Jones, visited his son. During the recorded visit, Jones's father asked him what was going on and Jones replied, quote, "Did they find her? I panicked, I did it," end quote. Several days after the discovery of Angela's body, Jones pleaded not guilty to her murder. A judge appointed a public defender to represent Jones because he could not afford to hire his own attorney. Angela's murder stunned the entire community and made many parents and child welfare groups concerned about how to protect minors from online predators. While Jones was a convicted sex offender, just 2 weeks before Angela's murder, police had conducted a surprise check on him. He was living where he said he was, at home with his parents, and had been holding down a job 6 days a week at the Bell Point Ranch. Jones was completely in compliance with Arkansas's reporting requirements for sex offenders. Since Jones was no longer a parolee and no court orders had been issued to check his computers, police didn't have the authority to do so when they checked on him. Quote, "Our hands were pretty much tied," end quote, said Corey Thomas, a senior inspector with the U.S. Marshals Service in Fort Smith. Speaking about online predators, Angela's grandmother, Colleen, urged parents to monitor the conversations that their children were having online. Quote, "They're everywhere. They're on the free game sites. There are so many chat sites out there. These kids know these chat sites and the parents don't know. And the kids who have internet on their phones, you have to check that daily, 3 times a day if you can. I do not want to see another child end up like my Angela," end quote. Angela's funeral was held at the Ocker Funeral Home in Van Buren on the 25th of February. The service included some of her favourite songs, including Shout to the Lord and I Run to You. Hundreds of locals attended the service while local florists donated flowers. Angela was buried at Grace Lawn Cemetery in Van Buren.
I'm feeling numb. I'm feeling the loss of my baby girl. I miss her.
Hundreds of people poured into the Ocker Putnam Funeral Home to say goodbye to 16-year-old Angela Allen.
Family describe her as a loving, outgoing teenage girl that frequently chatted online. It was a pastime her family wishes they would have kept a better eye on.
I've lost my Angie because of something like that, and I don't want to see another child, another family to go through what I've had to go through. It's rough, real rough.
Investigators believe it was Allen's pastime on a social networking site that connected her with 36-year-old Lloyd Jones, a convicted sex offender. Police believe Jones was the last one to see her alive. Allen's body was found on property owned by the Jones family off of Highway 96 in Lavaca. The devastation of her murder now has her loved ones wanting to send a message to all families.
Please be more careful with your kids. Find out where they're going. They take off walking, you go with them, because I don't want them to come up missing like my Angela.
Really watch your computers. I know if you think you are computer savvy, your kids are just a tad bit more savvier than you.
In April of 2012, Butterfield Junior High School held a violence awareness walk in honor of Angela. The Walk a Mile in Her Shoes event was aimed at educating the community in the dangers of online predators. The event was filled with laughter and tears as hundreds of students put on high heels and walked around the campus before planting a red maple tree in Angela's honor. Online safety was a big theme of the event. Van Buren police showed mugshots of local sex offenders and detailed the crimes that they had committed. Quote, "It's really important that as a community we stand up and don't let this happen to another child," end quote, said Colleen Nick of the Morgan Nick Foundation. Detective Donald Eversole told the teenagers to not speak to people that they do not know online, adding that a number of officers have fake Facebook profiles where they pose as teenagers to lure sex offenders. He said that he recognized a lot of the faces there that day, stating, quote, "A lot of you have Facebook pages. The reason I know this is that a lot of you are my friends. You made a friend without knowing who I am," end quote. The following month, a brief hearing was held where court clerks announced that Lloyd Jones' trial was scheduled for the 16th of July. Sebastian County prosecuting attorney Daniel Hsu offered Jones a life sentence if he agreed to plead guilty. Jones' public defender, Rita Watkins, announced that Jones had turned down the deal, preferring to take his chances in court. Watkins also said that she would like to postpone the trial, quote, "I've got some things I'm looking into. I don't foresee that the case is going to trial in July. I don't think we'll be ready," end quote, she said. The trial was therefore pushed back to the 17th of December to grant Jones's defense more time to prepare. However, the following month, Lloyd Jones pleaded guilty to first-degree murder and was sentenced to 60 years in prison. He also pleaded guilty to 3 counts of possession of material depicting sexually explicit conduct with a child and 1 count of abuse of a corpse. Jones had cut off Angela's arm to make her fit into the barrel. Quote, "He will not be eligible for parole until he's 96 years old. So we look at this as a life sentence," end quote, said prosecutor Allison Houston. During his sentencing hearing, Colleen read out a victim impact statement which read, quote, "When you saw how young she was, why didn't you just drive off? Why did you have to hurt 2 families with your actions, Angie's family and your family? I want my family to heal. The only way we can heal is by forgiveness. So I do forgive you. Can you forgive yourself?" End quote. Angela's brother Seth wasn't as forgiving. His impact statement read in part, quote, "You're the kind of person that shouldn't deserve to live. You're a disgrace to this planet to take her out of this world when she could have changed the world," end quote. Since Jones pleaded guilty, what truly happened to Angela still remains unknown. What is known, however, is that Jones clearly lied when he said he hit her, causing her to fall into the water when she revealed her age. That explanation just does not correlate with the evidence. Angela had been strangled to death and then stuffed in a barrel and buried on property that his family owned. There was no water in her lungs. Maybe it's for the best that we don't know exactly how Angela spent her last few moments on this earth. Jones was sent to the East Arkansas Regional Unit in Brickleys, and behind his cell door, he was quietly forgotten about by the outside world. That was, at least, until June of 2016, when Jones escaped from prison while working on a construction site. He had been assigned to a construction crew, which was around 2 miles west of the prison. He was neither handcuffed nor shackled at the work detail, but was apparently being supervised by one or more guards. When Colleen learned of the escape, she was understandably in complete disbelief. Quote, "I knew our judicial system is broken, but this goes to prove it. How could he walk away? Are these people not being monitored? Watched? For somebody to be able to walk off from something like that, there's something wrong somewhere. I'm hurt. To see this happen, this is inexcusable," end quote. Authorities announced that they believed Jones had fled on foot and had been missing for less than an hour when it was noticed that he was gone. Searchers combed the area around the East Arkansas Regional Correctional Facility and blocked off Arkansas 79 and Arkansas 131 near the prison, but no trace of Jones was found. A $20,000 reward for information that could lead to Jones's capture was implemented, and numerous people called in with tips about his whereabouts, but none led to his discovery. Locals and law officials alike lost a lot of sleep contemplating what a man who was capable of such a brutal crime could be planning on doing with his newfound freedom. However, on day 3 of the search, Jones was thankfully recaptured in a farm field near the Mississippi River, around a mile away from the prison.
These pictures show Lloyd Jones back in handcuffs. Police say he was found near the prison that he escaped from. Jones was serving a 60-year sentence in prison without parole for murdering 16-year-old Angela Allen.
He strangled her to death, but he beat her before he strangled her. That's sick. It is so sick. It's sick to take another person's life.
We learned Jones was not being held in maximum security. A prison spokesperson said because of good behavior, Jones was allowed to work outside the prison, as long as he was supervised by an armed guard. But on Monday, Jones walked away and was on the run until this afternoon.
The prison escape led to an internal investigation which showed complacency among prison employees had led to Jones's escape. Arkansas Department of Corrections Director Wendy Kelly said that two guards and two construction officers were there with the group of 16 inmates as they worked on the site near the prison. One of the guards took an inmate from the crew to a medical appointment, while the two construction supervisors took two other inmates to install butane bottles at a different location. This left one guard watching over 13 inmates who were eating their lunch. Four of these inmates finished their lunch and asked if they could go back to work. The guard incorrectly allowed them to and tried to keep an eye on those four, as well as the other nine inmates still eating their lunch. It was at this point that Jones made his escape. It wasn't until a little while later that the guard did a head count and realized that one was missing. As a result of the mistake, one employee was fired, another employee was suspended without pay, and two others were reprimanded. Despite the fact that Jones was a convicted child killer, he was still eligible to work unshackled outside of the prison as long as there were guards watching him.
She didn't deserve what she got. She did not. Nobody, no child deserves it. No child. She thought he was an 11th grader. That's called grooming or dressing. And that's what these young people don't understand. There are evil people out there, and they are out for these children.
The murder of Angela Allen highlights the horrors of online predators. Angela thought that she was meeting a teenage boy, but completely unbeknownst to her, she was actually speaking with a middle-aged, violent sex offender. Online grooming can be hard to recognize. A new relationship may not appear to be sexual, as groomers often initially build a relationship. In the invisible world of online social media platforms, anybody can be whoever they want, and the person they're duping are completely oblivious. Angela's murder raised awareness of online grooming and carried an important message which is just as valuable today. Do you really know who your online friends are? Well, guys, that is it for this episode of Morbidology. As always, thank you so much for listening. I'd like to take this moment to give a big, massive thank you to my new Patreon, Meep Corp. Morbidology is a one-woman podcast, so the Patreon support really does go a long way. If you're interested in ad-free episodes, early release episodes and articles, and other goodies, please make sure you check out Morbidology on Patreon. I'd also like to thank everyone who has taken the time to leave a kind review on iTunes. I really do appreciate all of the support. Also, make sure you visit us at morbidology.com for more information about this episode and to read our true crime articles. Until next time, take care of yourselves and have an amazing week.
This is Brew Crime, a craft beer and true crime podcast.
I'm Mike.
I'm Beck.
And I'm Nina.
And we're your hosts.
We pair a true crime story with a craft beer.
That Nina will probably hate.
Yeah, probably.
Whatever. You can find our show on all your favorite podcast apps, and if you can't find it, contact us and we'll try and change that.
We can be found at brewcrime.com or on Twitter at brewcrime, on Facebook at brewcrime, or if you want to go to our group, it's group/brewcrime on Facebook, or on Instagram at Pacific Beer Chat.
Join us as we discuss the horrible crimes that surround us and try not to giggle.